Today's class is really something special, and I'm just going to review some of the things that we saw for the purposes of this recording. We're now in the home of, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Abigail Barley.
Abigail, yes. And we are in Langley, British Columbia. Am I right? So this is Langley, yes?
Yes.
And we're on a farm where Gil and Jenna are raising what is called Jacob's sheep, and we'll actually post some pictures alongside these recordings. And I want to thank all of you very much. I want to thank the photographers, and your name is?
Tim
and Pat. And I want to thank you all for being here. So I just want to review what we've seen here. Today's Torah portion is the Torah portion of Vayetzeh, and it's still Wednesday at 3:30. It's Sunday, beautiful middle of the day, sun shining. And we are actually seeing what is called Jacob's sheep, where we see speckled, spotted, and I mentioned the ankle band specifically, which I pointed out outside. Those and some other elements are all in today's parsha. And there's a lot written online, so I don't have to give the whole history on this recording. Just look up Jacob's sheep and look up Gil, Jenna, Lewinsky, and you'll see all about it. So what is very interesting about the Jacob's sheep is they are unusual. Four horns, as we saw. Some of them have six. And there has to be a reason why we're told this whole story about the sheep and spotted, speckled, and about love on and trickery and all of that. And it has to speak to us, especially if you're like me. I was born and raised in London, which means that life was about bricks and streets and interesting expressions as people lined up for the bus stop. And if you ever wanted to see real life outside of human beings, you had to drive who knows where. And the same thing is for New York or any other in Paris or any such other such place. And here, we're coming to a rural area. Get your feet nice in the, you know, muddy and all of that. And this parsha is going to speak to us in a very, very special way, because I will tell you that this parsha is going to tell the hopeful story of our lives individually and as a people. And the way to set this up is to start on page 180. And I do want to add, as we do every week, that this class is given in memory of Blumen Pestle Pastor Pesach Halevi and my father-in-law, Harav Gershom Ben Harav Ben Tzion. The Torah portion begins 180. Because we have a lot of things to cover, if I go too fast or I'm not clear, I'm hoping that you will interrupt me, which is what I always hope. Okay, so here's the Torah portion, and allegorically is how I'm going to read the very first few sentences, and this will set the tone for the parasha and everything we're supposed to learn from it. On the surface, it says, "Vayetzi Yaakov mi'Be'er Sheva," that Yaakov went out of a place called Be'er Sheva, "Vayelech," and he went Charona, to a place called Charon. Now let's take a look at the mystical interpretation, which will set the tone for all of this. The soul comes down to this world. So Vayetze Yaakov, Yaakov is referring to the godly soul that goes out from where it's comfortable up in the worlds, the spiritual worlds. Mi be'er, from a wellspring of godly light, of godly energy, that's what it's enjoying, and it goes out of there. And the word shova spells the word soveya, which means satisfied, also shavua in Hebrew. All of those words, and the word sheva, seven, which I won't have time to bind it here, to connect it here, but those who've been around long enough, you'll see automatically. All of these words are spelled the same way because they have the following meaning. When the soul comes down to this world, God says to the soul, you're going to go into this world, physical world, where there's a lot more bad than good. But I want you to swear that you are going to make it your life's mission to make good override and be dominant and be your direction over the bad. That is your purpose here. And how could you make the soul swear? Because who says the soul can do it? You can only make the soul swear, which is shavua, if it's saveya, satisfied with enough ability to do it. Because let's just consider the following. Imagine if somebody's tied to the tree and you tell them run. They're stupid. So God is not going to send a soul down here and to say, I want you to make spirituality and godliness dominant in a world where evil and deception and darkness is dominant if we don't have the ability. And where are we going? Vayelech, and the soul goes, Charono. Now, Charono, the suffix hey, means to, like le, Rashi says this. Choron to choron. What is choron? Choron means anger. Why is this world called anger? Because we do enough things to make God angry. In other words, to agitate the purpose of creation. I mean, God does not just fly into fits of anger, but the point is we want to use metaphors and anthropomorphisms, which means using physical characteristics to understand the divine, then we'll say this is a world that agitates God, or you can say to get God angry, which is the word charon or charon af, for those who know the word. So this is setting the tone. And in order to set the tone, this is the perfect place to do it here, where we've just been with a sheep, because I'd like to share this story. There was once a principal, and he was giving a lecture on education to a bunch of parents. And he was talking to them. The subject was being patient and, you know, speaking nicely. And those who remember many years ago, we had a comedian named Modi. And he said, I had a grandfather, and he had a psychologist, psychiatrist, an educator, a teacher, a parent, all in one hand. And if we did something wrong, just boom. And he says, today, we sort of go down and we squat and we say, hi, Elizabeth, can you please not yell at me like that? It makes me feel bad. Right? Okay. So he's giving this whole lecture, this principle about patience. And then, just as they're finishing and people are schmoozing, he looks out the window and he sees where they poured fresh cement. And he sees some kids, you know what they do? Put their 2 feet in the cement, then they bend down, put their hands, and then they're going to write their names. He opens up the window, and he starts yelling at them. So one of the parents says, excuse me, weren't you talking about patience? I was talking in theory, now they're in the concrete. Okay. So we are in the field, and I noticed those black pellets, which... Maybe it's called scat, to say it nicely. You know what I'm saying, scat? No, yeah, scat in the wildlife. Manure is a nicer way, also another way of saying it, right? And we're doing that and holding the sheep, which, believe it or not, I actually held one of those sheep, which is amazing in itself. And we're going to be speaking about the loftiest spiritual ideas about these sheep. So it seems like we're talking in the heavens in theory, and we're also somewhere down in the real world. Well, there's a story which we're not going to get into too much, but if you just take a look on the same page, 180, there's a dream in verse 12. It says, Vayachalom, Yaakov had a dream. V'hinei sulam utzav arza, there was a ladder that was set firmly on the ground. V'roshah, and its upper end, its head, magia hashamayim, was reaching to the heavens. That's our story. Living here on terra firma and reaching for the heavens, connecting the two. We're going to speak about those sheep. I'm going to speak about who knows what. We're going to connect the two because it's about my life and your life and our lives. So with that in mind, I'd like us to turn to where we have the story of where Yaakov actually comes to the well and he meets Rachel. We are now on page 186 and there's a story and normally we have one of you read it. But just because we've got lots to cover and just because of the situation here, I'll just tell you very briefly, and you can go through it as well. So Yaakov comes over to the well, and he sees there's a whole bunch of shepherds, and they're sitting around. So I'll paraphrase a little bit. He says, how come you're just boozing around and lazing around and WhatsApping and whatever else? You know, sending texts? You're supposed to be with the sheep, shepherding. Oh, they said, you know, we have this enormous rock that covers the well. You know, that's how you keep it clean. And on our own, we're not able to roll that stone off. So we wait till we get a whole bunch of us together. And together, we roll it off. Well, Yaakov sees Rachel there. And he, on his own, this man who in the previous Torah portion, it says how he's just Ish Tom Yoshev Aholim. He would sit there in the tents and study Torah. He rolls off the whole thing by himself. So let's understand, again, what the mystical teachings, and in this case, this is highlighted by our Rebbe, because I just want to say a general thing about today's class. The subject of the spotted speckled and ankle bands and other aspects, banded sheep, is discussed in Hasidus so much, and I never understood why. I knew about it, but when I had to prepare for this class, because I knew when they came Rosh Hashanah, they told us about the sheep, I said, okay, I'm going to jump in and see how this subject, which is so enormous in the teachings of Chassidus, how it really talks to all of us. And here it is. So I'm saying that a lot of what I'm going to say is all over Hasidut. This particular piece, I believe, is specifically from our Rebbe. So here it is. The Rebbe says as follows. You know, there are two general emotions, of which all emotions are subcategories of them. One is love, and the other is awe. So attraction, kindness, anything that's in that mode is under the category, we're going to call it love. Or we call it kindness. Chesed. And the other one is anything where you keep your distance. For example, keeping your boundaries, reverence, anything that we do, like dressing respectfully, anything like that, we'll put it under the category of awe. Okay? So now, if we take, let's say I'm a very giving person, but that's pretty much what I think about all the time. You know what it means? It means that I've not paid attention to make keeping my boundaries in God's path as well. So in other words, we can be very giving, and we can let it all hang out, and we have no boundaries. And for those of us who remember the 1960s, and we can see some of that today, we understand that you can be very loving and all-encompassing, and let's la-la and all of that, and it could be wonderful, but there has to be some boundaries. So what happens? That if we don't focus on making our boundaries in God's path, we can therefore become people who in our boundaries will be very negativist. Like, who are you? Because we haven't worked on refining that element of our character. Or on the other hand, a person is very careful to be, you know, proper gentleman. Since I'm a guy, I'll say it that way. And to do everything prim and proper and courteous. But I've never paid attention much to how giving I am. So I can be very prim and proper, but somebody says, I need a big favor. Excuse me, it's my lunchtime right now. You see? So what we really need is to make sure that both sides of our character are in the godly path. So when it says here that these shepherds would come together, so it's talking about the one shepherd. And we'll soon talk about why shepherds and why sheep, which was mentioned outside. So if you have one shepherd, you can't move the rock. You know what the rock is? That nut that you have to crack? Your nemesis? Yeah, we all have one. At least one. I don't know. I got a lot of pride. I have too many in that department. But the point is that if we've only focused on shepherding one area of our character, let's say the area of boundaries, and I've made it very proper, I cannot get rid of my rock. I also have to have the other shepherd that develops my giving and outflow characteristic. Then the shepherds that come together, they can roll off the rock. How come Yaakov could do it by himself? Because, as we've said in previous classes, his grandfather, Avram, his dominant characteristic was kindness and giving. Yitzchak, last week's Torah portion, his dominant characteristic was introspection, boundaries, not leaving Israel, etc. But Yaakov was called Tiferet. Tiferet is, I'll use the word harmony, or synthesis, or beauty. So if you can have black, it's just black. You can have white, and it's just white. But you can take black and white with a pencil, and just with a few perfect strokes, you'll have a perfect piece of art. Right, where the black and white is perfectly balanced. And that is characteristic of Yaakov. So Yaakov, he can roll off the stone by himself. So now, why is it that this whole story is with sheep? We heard outside correctly how sheep is so dominant within Judaism. The reason is, mystically speaking, that sheep represent humility. You know, they're not going to go out and who knows what, like other animals. And also, the way they go in a herd, we all saw that. One of them starts moving and they all go, right? The families, they were together, you mentioned that. This was the Ashkenazi herd, this was the Sephardic herd, and these were the Yemenites, and then never the twain shall meet, right? No. So, and we're actually going to talk about this. That's why it's a joke and not a joke, because it's actually part of what we're going to learn today. But the point is, let's say you have a relationship, a parent and a child. So if you're a child, you're a somebody, and you have a parent, and you connect. But when you're part of the herd, that's the side of you where, forget my individuality, because this is really where we're going to be headed with the spots, the speckles, and all of those things, is because we have to have individuality, We have to have togetherness. You have to have both of them to work together. So if a person says, well, I'm into rugged individualism. And we've had certainly in the 20th century movements where the individual didn't count at all. And some pretty terrible things came out as a result. So with this in mind, I'm going to ask you to turn to chapter 30, verse 43, which is on... So, on page 198, in verse 43, it says, Yaakov, who was balanced between boundaries, definition, and outflow and giving, he was able to take sheep, which is the idea of that we're all interrelated, and he was able to develop it in a great, great way. It says, Vayifrat ha'ish ma'od ma'od, that he became enormously wealthy. Vayhi lotzon rabot yadlat ha'sheep, ushvachot, maidservants, avarim servants, gmalim, camels, chamorim, and donkeys. Basically, he bought and sell and sold with them, did business with them, because you need to be in the all-inclusive mode, but you can't only be there. So, being in the all-inclusive mode, he took some of it and used it to develop other areas, which in the mystical teachings, it teaches what the maidservant represents, what the servant represents, what the camel represents, and the donkey represents, and that is using the idea of sheep. And now, let us turn the page where... So now, we're getting closer to the subject of the sheep, spotted, speckled, and all of that, given the flow and that we've taken from the beginning of the parasha to where we are today. So in verse 38, verse 37, it says, Yaakov took for himself fresh sticks of poplar, hazel, and chestnut wood. He peeled white streaks on them by uncovering the white that was inside the sticks. And in Hebrew that says, Vayikol Yaakov makel livne lach v'luz v'armon v'fatzel v'tzalot levanot machsof halvanon asher al hamaklot. And then it goes on to say that he inserted the sticks that he had peeled into the ground by the pools in which by the watering troughs would fill, where the flocks would come to drink, so that they faced the animals. This caused them to become stimulated and mate when they came to drink. The flocks became stimulated and mated on seeing the rods, and the flocks bore ringed. That's ankle ringed. If you take a look at the word in the Hebrew, for those who can read Hebrew, pasuk lamites, akudim. Because the ayin kuf is like the word akev, heel. So it's a band above the heel. And that's why outside I pointed out to you, and I was trying with my camera on those moving sheep to get pictures specifically of the ankle bands, which would otherwise be overlooked. And nekudim, patched, and utluim, and striped. Okay, and then it goes on to say, and you can read it as I'm talking, how he separated those for his profit, and... then he had tremendous wealth, turn page, and then Lavan, that's his wife's father, is all upset because he's taking too much profit by taking the unusually colored sheep. And verse 5. Yaakov says, you know, I see that he's not really, he doesn't like me that much. And you know, I've worked so hard. And it goes on to say, if one day he says, you take the spotted, fine. Next day he says, no, I'll take the speckled. The other day he says, no. He keeps changing it so and so many times. And here is where we need to pay attention. Because in verse 10, it says something which is slightly different than the descriptions mentioned earlier. Earlier, it spoke about the ankles and the spotted the spotted speckled. And here it says a word which you didn't see before, which is brudim, right at the end of verse number 10. So let's read what it says. It says, then at the time when the animals became stimulated, I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream that, look, angels were bringing ringed, spotted, and striped he-goats from the flocks of Lavan's sons to mate with the female animals. Okay. And Then he says in verse 12, this is the angel of God says to him in the dream, Sona einecho, please lift up your eyes and see that all of the he-goats are mounting, the animals are ringed, spotted, and striped, for I've seen all that Lavan is doing to you. Now this word brudim does not appear before. So now let us explain, what does this mean, and what is this business about peeling the sticks and all of that? One of the things that Gil said outside is from the commentators about how there was a miracle involved in these sheep coming to the way they are. And that is very correct. But if there's a miracle, why do you have to peel the sticks? So here it is. Peeling the sticks is doing something in the physical world. And a miracle is God doing something above the world. So in very general terms, that in our sojourn on this earth, we have to express godliness by what we do in the regular world, and also in the parts of our life that are supernatural. And I'd like to bring that right down home. So, for example, when we live in the way the Torah teaches us, we're doing everything the right way. So, fine, we're expressing godliness within this world, which we've discussed many, many times. But there's part of us that is beyond nature. I'd like to mention a book which I feel, even though this was not the intention of the author, this expresses it very much, and that's why it's in our bookshelf, and it's called Startup Nation, right? Startup Nation, and whoever hasn't read it, and you don't like reading a whole book, the best part, in my humble opinion, read the introduction. You will be blown away. I defy you to read the introduction and not continue reading. Because what do we see there? The same thing that we're going to see tomorrow night when we are going to show the documentary Above and Beyond, an hour and a half, and anybody who's not thinking of coming, I tell you, join us tomorrow night. We have a minion in the yard site at 7, and 7:30 we show Above and Beyond, and here is the story. Unbelievable story, and similar to the story of Startup Nation, this is things that we just take for granted, and it's supernatural. So here they are, they're going to announce that we're going to have a state of Israel, and they have five nations with thousands, tens of thousands of weapons, of soldiers, of everything under the sun to just wipe us off the map. What are we going to do? And they had no airplanes. They had maybe a couple of Pipers. A Piper, the way I understand airplanes, if you think of a regular airplane, so a Piper is like a paper cup to a nice, good, normal cup. That's the way I understand it. So what happened, as you'll see in the movie, how they had leftovers from the Second World War of different airplanes, and they just mix and match. You know, mix and match a plane from this one, a propeller from that one, an engine from the other one. It doesn't fit. You have to shove it in. And it was so desperate that when they put together these few planes, it was just a few of them, and they're in the hangar, and they said, okay, when do you expect to bring these over? Well, we're going to test flight, do a test flight, and we don't have time. They said, you know, we have the Egyptian army, some other armies you'll see tomorrow, with, I don't know, tens of thousands of soldiers, and they're 6 miles from Tel Aviv. If you don't get into those planes right now, and come right now, there's going to be no Israel. So if I didn't see the whole thing, but I did see part of it. If I remember correctly, there was maybe 3 or 4 planes, like a handful of these planes, they didn't even know if they're going to fly. And who's flying them? Not religious people. You'll soon see why I say that. So these are boys from America, United States, and they just finished flying in the Second World War. But they heard about this, and it was made illegal for them to take our planes, for them to go and do this. They were risking jail time and other such things. I couldn't live with myself if I wasn't going to do this. And they went out there, went into those planes, and you see actually the pictures of the Egyptian army. And he says, I did a quick Shema Yisrael, even though I'm not religious. That's in a quote. The fellow saying, even though I'm not religious, said Shema Yisrael. And I did a dive bomb. In other words, he went upside down. Because this way, when you come straight down, you get a direct hit. And in their words, we stopped them cold. Who is we? A few Jewish boys from the United States. Like I said, Lego stuck together with chewing gum planes. How in the world do a few people stop tens of thousands? We kind of take that for granted. That's our supernatural living on this earth. Just, was it yesterday? Friday night. And I hope you know I shouldn't say his name without his permission, another thing. But, one second. So I'm sitting next to this fellow, and he fought in the Yom Kippur War, taken out from Shul Yom Kippur War. He was in the Suez Canal. What he didn't see, terrible, terrible things. And you know what he told me? He said, until today, people are trying to study and explain, why did we win the war? I was there. I don't know how we were able to turn the tide in a day. And then he says to me, you know, and I just pointed upwards. He says, that's right. In other words, what I'm saying is, when it came to dealing with these sheep, so Yaakov on the one hand does his thing, and he makes the black and white, and not so incidentally, again, the Rebbe points out, more white than black, because even if you have to have measured in your life, you have to have more outflow than measurement, right? So you have to do your thing, and you bring godliness in regular daily living. But there's things that we see, and that is supernatural. The fact that we're still here against all of this that's going on, that God made a commitment 4,000 years ago to Abraham, we're never going to disappear. And they've been trying it ever since. We're still here. We need to remember this is God's plan. So in other words, you can read the book Startup Nation and say, oh, what a wonderful story of entrepreneurship. And you can watch the movie of Above and Beyond, and I'm going to repeat some of this tomorrow night. And you can say, oh, wow, what brave boys. But I think we have to wake up and say, wait a second. I'm watching God's hand. Acknowledge the supernatural. So these sheep, as they came, there's doing our thing and acknowledging God. And therefore he says, I see in the dream and the angel, he's telling me, spotted, speckled, and all of that. So that's what we're seeing. And now with that in mind, let's continue into the actual meaning of the three. There's actually four things. But three of them are mentioned in the dream. There's akudim, which is the ankle rings. Nokud, which is speckled, and as we heard today, certainly these sheep, when you shear them, you'll see the speckles on their skin. And then you have tolu, blushed. We saw a lot of that. And then we have brudim, which is banded. Now, banded is something that you'll soon see why, but we didn't see much of it, but we saw some of it. What does it mean, banded? Rashi tells us it means when the blotches spread and mix with each other, that you end up with a band. So it doesn't mean necessarily like a ruler straight band, maybe it yes or no, but that's the idea of banded, that the blotches sort of spread to become like bands. So now let's understand what this means, but first we have to know what is Lavan. Because all of this is happening in a struggle with Lavan. As we started at the outset, the soul is coming down to this world, dealing with what agitates the Almighty. Lavan is the color white for anybody, or Lavan, who speaks Hebrew. Lavan is white. Now, Yaakov is going through this whole situation for all these years, and who is orchestrating it? The one and only God, which we, in terms of the physical world, we want to use an anthropomorphism, let's say, we're going to say pure white. In the terms of Kabbalah, Levan HaElyon, the supernal white, where it's not where entities come together as one, but just pure oneness, God's oneness. That's really, even though Lavan was not a good man, as we know, but the story at its root is coming from a place, what we call in English, let's say pure white, but it's coming from that one, non-divisible, one and only God, and dealing with, he's orchestrating all of these stories of deception with our forefather to give us guidance of how to behave today. And here it is. We start from the bottom up. The akudim, which means ankle ring. And remember, even though there are many of those who have bands on their knees, but those with the black on their, call it the ankles, right above the hooves, what does that mean? It means that I'll call it embryonic unity. Let's say it like this. Child comes out to the world. They're all cute and they're all delicious and they're all into the same thing. Eating and sleeping. That's it. And if something doesn't go their way, they cry. So there's a certain unity. Then they grow older. And if you have a boy, then it's between his 13th and 14th birthday. And unfortunately, if you have a girl, I'm sorry everybody, it starts a bit earlier. Maybe they're like machmir, and maybe they start at 11 and a half sometimes. And I'll use a word, maybe this is the right word, like they individuate. In other words, one day, your son or your daughter, they do or say something. Is this my son? Is this my daughter? Like I had a niece, my sister told me, oh, she's such a tough character, never cried. And then one day at this stage, she starts crying. My sister says, how can you cry? She says, if I knew why I was crying, I wouldn't be crying. Yeah? And that sort of goes on till... Yeah, okay. We all know the story, right? But the point is that during those teen years, they become individuals. So, I'm not wearing a mohawk because I'm interested in anybody's opinion. Absolutely not. Now, you'll excuse me. And it's absolutely untrue that my navel ring in my eyebrow has nothing to do with other people's opinion. Right? I'm an individual. Okay. And then, so that's nekudim, which is the spots. A point. I'm this. That's it. You'll excuse my French. Mom, bug off. Right? Okay. This kind of thing. That's spotted. So you started embryonic, ankle bands, spotted. The spotted expands into, in English we call them blotches. And this is called tolu, even though it's not mentioned in the dream, as we shall hear the reason why, but it's mentioned a few times in the previous pages, how the sheep with blotches, which we saw outside. What is that? That's when we're beginning to get older, and we say, you know what? We need to integrate. We need to integrate, right? Expand a little, get some friends, and tolerate, and so on and so forth. But the real goal is to reach brudim. What is brudim? Where the blotches expand enough that they bleed into each other and you end up with a band, right? If it's white sheep, you have a band of, let's say, of black, because that's really the ultimate. The ultimate is that I'm an individual and nevertheless, we can live together. So I'll use a few examples. First, we'll talk globally, which is always easier because I don't have to do much about my own character when we speak globally. That's why we all love to talk politics. It's true. Let's be honest, right? We can tell every president and prime minister what to do, and I'm right, and he's stupid, and all, right? That's how it goes, right? So therefore, it's like this. So in the world, we just imagine in the course of history, so we have a few people roaming around the earth, right? So this embryonic stage, and we just need to survive. This is the ankle bands. And then we set up little countries. You stay out of my territory, etc. Nekudim, spots. And then, there comes a point, and unfortunately in history, it's taken a long, long time to come to this point of Nekudim, of Tolu, which means blotches to integrate. Because we realize, you know what? For example, just the realization that competition is good. Just think about that. Right? So, if we maybe take down some borders of, let's say, economic borders between countries, maybe we can all gain because of it a certain integration. And ultimately, if this could ever happen, which people at least in the last century have been at least speaking about it, and I don't know if people outside of the Jewish people, our prophet spoke about this way back when in biblical times, but outside of that, I don't know if anybody spoke about this before the 20th century really, about integration of, let's call it the human family, which today, maybe it looks like a pipe dream, but just to be fair, take for example something called Doctors Without Borders. Just the idea that somebody who has an advanced profession, which pays well, is going to take time off, and maybe time off from family, I'm not sure how that works, and go to some underprivileged place just to help those other people when it wasn't too long ago, well, who gave a hoot about other people? If they, you know, stomach swollen with hunger, so what? Who cares? You know, pass the beer burp, you know, and nothing else that matters. So now let's bring it a little bit closer to the Jewish people. So we started off as a family of Yaakov's children. And here, in today's parasha also, we have the 12 tribes are born, but they're all brothers. But then, they're separated into tribes. And something that, at least our generation, I'll say it that way, because maybe the younger generation hasn't really seen this, because things have changed in the last number of decades. You think Ashkenazim, Sephardim, you mentioned before, that's one thing. Let's say like this. Imagine that you have a place in England. I'm going to say imagine right now, okay? Even though it happens to be true, this way I don't want to say names and no, right? Imagine you're in a place called Hull, a place in England, a Jewish community. You have two shuls.
Four.
Four shuls, right? And the people in this shul, and they're all Ashkenazim, they have nothing to do with the people in those shul. You know what? One day there was an earthquake, and somebody from this shul married somebody from that shul. And we have a descendant sitting right here. My point is, you know, I look at that, and we all look at that, and we say, like, what is this? And the truth is, this is the proper question. Enough of being speckled. From speckled, you have to expand into blotches. You know what? That's okay. And today, there's so many people from all sorts of communities. There's so many couples, Ashkenazim and Sephardim, married together. I mean, just in the Sephardic shul in Vancouver. I don't want to say the name for the recording, but we all know. So, the rabbi, he's a Sephardi. He married an Ashkenazi. And we have in North Surrey, again, shouldn't say the name for the recording. So this is somebody who's born in Siberia, Ashkenazi, who married a Sephardi. So at least we're coming, you know, we're waking up, we're becoming mature. We're not we're not teenagers anymore. What is the real goal? The real goal is, you know, you and me, whoever you are, we're so different, and we're still going to live completely together, where the blotches expand and bleed into each other to create a band. So this is what Chassidus is doing, telling us about these parsha, and we're here and we're looking at the Jacob sheep. Remember what I started with? Out there in the mud, holding the sheep, getting the wool on your right, and it's just, oh, what a great time today has been. And we're in the physical world, and we're talking about, and I saw in my dream an angel of God says, I'm taking the sheep from here to there, miraculous. What does that have to do with me? But all of a sudden, when we really go through the progression, as we did today, we see it is talking for me. And therefore, I'd like to close by leaving us all, myself too, with an introspective question. First of all, in order to create integration, I have to be introspective. Am I dominantly on the giving, nice, warm, cuddly side, but I'm not careful with my boundaries? Or am I so prim and proper? I'm coming from England, I know a little bit what that is. I mean, believe it or not, from where I lived, I used to sometimes take a walk straight down the road, Stamford Hill, and it ended up on London Bridge, and you'd go through the city of London, and you'd literally, business people, with top hats and bowler hats, with a brolly, that's British for an umbrella, and a little, I don't know what they called it, under their arm. Everything prim and proper. That's how you're doing it all right. But can you compliment somebody? Can you give somebody the benefit of the doubt? Can you say, you know what? High tea is going to wait for 20 minutes. I have to help somebody. Can you do that? So that's the first step. And if one is ready to integrate within ourselves, now I can take a look at how I'm interacting with other people. Okay, where in my life, for example, in my home, there's a couple, right? So one of us, I'm speaking to myself. Okay, where am I in this relationship? Where am I behaving speckled? Totally honest. Okay, so that hurts, you know? Can I become from speckled to become blotched? Or do I have to find another self-justification for my self-centeredness and remain speckled, remain a teenager, keep the mohawk, you understand? Right? And the same thing we expand further. What about with other people? So, for example, if I'm in a situation and a certain type of person walks in, whether it's to do with their visage, their comportment, or the way they speak, what is that first gut reaction? Is that a speckled gut reaction? Or is it warm and fuzzy, more of a splotched? And my goal is, from my behavior, is to become like the band. The splotches should bleed into each other. And the truth of the matter is, because this last word, I said it a number of times, the word brudim, does not appear earlier. It only appears when they're talking about the dream. Because what is the Messianic era about? Not that this world is going to become a non-world. In the Messianic era, These cards are going to be cards. This tissue box will be a tissue box. And this smartphone, if it's still smart at that time, will be what it is. But none of the divisiveness of this world will be a contradiction to the oneness of God. In other words, the real embryonic stage, those ankle bands, are no longer just ankle bands of what you're growing from, but the entire sheep. Remember, we're compared to a sheep. God says, "Va'aten tzoni, you are my flock." The entire sheep has a band around it because we're totally, totally integrated. So I want to thank you for bringing us here. There's nothing like hands-on from the sheep all the way to the heavenly spheres of Kabbalah, right down to what Chassidus says, how we should behave today. So I want to thank you all very much. So we have a wonderful question here, which brings me to now say something which I didn't think we'd have time for. So what is the meaning of taking these woods, and it has to tell us what type of tree, poplar tree, like, so what? And let's say it's not a poplar tree. So very quickly, in Kabbalah it explains there are three types of trees, because each one, and I did not get to study why these represent what I'm going to say, be honest, but these three types of trees represent the three faculties of intellect, which we've spoken many, many times. They are Chochmah, which is when the germ of an idea pops into your head, which we all have that experience. And Bina, which is the expansion and analysis and all of the details. And that is when we understand something so thoroughly that it projects us into this mode of conviction, which is really part intellect and part charging the emotions. Now, the idea of putting them by the troughs, by the water, and animals in heat, that is dealing with eating and excitement. In other words, emotions. Human beings operate through emotions. If the emotions are left without a brain in charge, then people behave like animals. So, what he's doing is, what Yaakov is doing, because I also did not get into how everything we do here causes a parallel effect in the spiritual worlds. And what he's doing is, he's taking something physical in this earth to represent the idea that we are to take our intellect and through the intellect create a positive emotional charge. If somebody gets up and just explains so clearly how there's a certain cause and it's urgent and he gets the people charged up, then he has made that transition from just an intellectual study where a professor of history, for example, let's say he says, well, this is how it went over there, but it has nothing to do with us. I've actually heard that being said. Versus, you explain it and you say, you know what, we got to get up and we got to do something. So what he's doing is, he's teaching this idea. Take your intellect and get a hold of your emotions, put in it a positive charge. Now, you know what the positive charge was, because it's created, you know, these type of sheep, which has the progression that we spoke in this whole class. Now, there's one difference between him doing that and today. Because in Chassidut and in Kabbalah, it explains what he was doing was the same spiritual flow that happens when we put on tefillin, black, white, when you put it on your arm. Because once the Torah was given, Moses went up the mountain and God came down to the mountain, then if we did something spiritual with a physical, something physical, it could become holy. We can take a cow, make it into tefillin or a mezuzah, it becomes holy. Prior to the giving of the Torah, there was spiritual, and physical was physical, and the ladder connecting the ground in the beginning of this week's parasha, Yaakov's dream, to the heavens, was only a dream, meaning foretelling the future, but it wasn't yet a time when physical and spiritual could really be bridged. But today, once we put on tefillin for the first time, it's no longer a piece of leather, it has holiness. But the concept of putting on tefillin, we put the head tefillin on our head, and we put this other one opposite the heart, which is reminding us, take your mind and take control of your emotions. So your actions, that's the rest of the straps, okay, going down to the body and on your arms. So your actions can be directed towards the service of God. So he was doing the same concept with making the wood black and white. And that's why I said earlier, more white than black. That's the more whiteness than constriction. But except that the sticks didn't become holy. But that's really why it specifically goes on to explain exactly how he did it, peeling and so on and so forth. Right? Okay.